Broadcasting from the confines of an abandoned radio station in the secluded apartment building of high strangeness from the foothills of the Colorado Rockies. It's time for full disclosure of the topics they told us were off limits. I'm Connie Willis, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Tonight, 9/11. Time to turn off the lights. Join me for another interesting evening of conversation, much needed education, and the chance that we might get a little closer to the truth of what lurks amongst us and what is beyond. I'm Connie Willis, and this is Coast to Coast AM. You're listening to Coast AM. Hi, Connie Willis back with you tonight. Thanks so much for all the emails and the tweets and the all that good stuff. I really appreciate it. So much social media out there. Anyway, you all found them all. Thank you so much for great comments, by the way. I really, really do appreciate that. If you do want to find me elsewhere, I'm at ConnieWillis.com, ConnieWillis.com. Lots of cool shows there. Go check it out. In fact, just sign up and I'll send you more information along the way. That way we can get on to tonight's subject, which is something you've probably been watching, hearing about, and thinking about all day long. And even last night, of course, we were talking about it. As an empathic myself, which I know a lot of you understand what that is here, it's so great to talk here on Coast to Coast because we're all open to these kinds of things. But as an empath, the entire day today, especially earlier this morning when I think more of the memorial type things were going on in the celebrations, I feel the shadow of today. I felt like the shadow. Does that make sense to other people? Does that make sense to you? That shadow, just like that was just the perfect word when I was trying to describe it. You could just feel everyone feeling that way. So tonight we're going to be talking about 9/11. We're going to be doing open lines in the last 2 hours. And we're going to ask you the same question I had asked last night. We've had too many people waiting in line to want to talk more. And that was, where were you when it happened? Where were you when it happened, 9/11? So we were going to be with Waverly Hills. We've moved that. We'll be back with them. Great people. And they, of course, understood because we want to be able to talk with you guys more about it. So tonight's guest is a guest and a friend of mine now, after years of meeting a long time ago, putting him on Coast to Coast and talking as an undertaker and everything that happened to the body after it passed away, all the way from that time until the funeral and everything like that. He went through absolutely everything with us. However, some other interesting things that he has done brings him to tonight. This is Stanley Swan. He's now retired since the last time he was ever on as a New York State undertaker. He spent 12 days working search and recovery of the Twin Towers remains there on Staten Island right after 9/11. 12 days of the research and recovery. Can you imagine that? If you've been watching, I've been watching the documentaries all day long. Just amazing stuff that they've put together, and a constant day of emotion and sadness and truth as well. I like when they get really deep into exactly what happened, not just glossing it over, but you know, showing people what really happened. I think that makes the difference. And Stanley had said he's going to be open to doing the same thing with us tonight. He's going to be straight up. He's going to tell you the facts. He's going to tell you how he felt, what he saw, what he dealt with. He's going to get right into it. I think it's extremely important for people to feel, get touched by what really happened. Because if we keep glossing over and we don't get touched, you guys already know the answer to that. But he was asked to search for partials and personal effects, aircraft parts, all sorts of things he'll be talking about tonight. And he's going to be describing how tough and that was, as well as an honor. So welcome to Coast to Coast, Stanley Swan. Once again, how are you, Stan?
Hi, Connie. Very good. I'm so happy to be with you tonight, although it's a very solemn subject that we've been watching and listening to most of the weekend. But it's great to be with you again. And before we start the conversation, I'd like to just pause just 10 seconds to honor all those people that lost their lives that day 20 years ago. And let's just take pause for just a minute.
Good idea.
And we hope that all those families that were touched by this tragic thing that happened to the country will have some peace and some hope for the future. It was a tremendous thing we all witnessed 20 years ago, and hopefully we'll never see anything like that again here in the U.S., but it was something that marked all of us, and I think continues to mark all of us as we trudge on with new things in life, you know?
Well, you know, I mean, just today we got every news story or everything that happened, felt it again, went through it again. Where did you, as I'm watching the footage, by the way, I'm thinking about you when they're showing the debris and all the rubble. And I'm actually looking for you, by the way. I'm looking for you in there. Tell me how all that started with you getting involved.
Yeah, it actually started in addition to owning the funeral home in Andover, New York, that I owned for like 20 years. I was a member of the Allegheny County Sheriff's Department in Allegheny County, New York, Belmont, New York. And that morning, we were at range requalifying with our weapons. We had to do that once or twice a year, and that's when we first found out that the plane had been flown into the first tower. So we finished our qualifying and went back to the sheriff's office and watched the television, and like everyone else, trying to watch and see what was going on. And it was within about maybe 7 or 8 or 9 days that our sheriff got the call from higher ups that they wanted a team from our county and our sheriff's department to come to Manhattan to do some work. And I want to acknowledge those people now that were involved. Our sheriff was Randall Belmont, and the officers that went down were deputies Dan Hanchett, Ryan McKnight, Terry Palmer, myself, and the late Derek Ward. There were six of us that about 10 days after the actual incident that we trekked to New York City and walked that first time from the arrival at Battery Park that evening that we arrived, walked down to observe that rubble pile. And it still gives me shudders to think about it because it was indescribable.
So you got a phone call and said, hey, we need you. As part of, were you totally surprised that, hey, what are you calling me? There's like all these people in the state.
Yeah, we kind of were, but, you know, it was such a huge, huge amount of destruction that I knew that just in the back of my mind that there would be a lot of different departments around the state and even out-of-state agencies that would be called to see if they wanted to offer extra people. So it was going to be a huge endeavor to go down there. And we didn't really know at the time when we were called what we were going to be doing when we got down there. If we were going to be doing security because we were sheriff's office. I kind of knew in the back of my mind I'd be doing some work in the funeral business because that's how I became involved with the team, because as a funeral director, the sheriff said, well, yeah, your skills are probably going to be needed. So I was included in that team. But there were people from hundreds and hundreds of departments around the country who finally went to Manhattan and eventually to Staten Island.
So when you get there, you and your team, how'd that go? How did that, what were the steps? What happened? You had to just be at a loss, especially looking at all the entire buildings out there. I can't imagine how much you saw You must have been overwhelmed when you first got there. But then for them to say bucket by bucket by bucket
It was overwhelming that first night we walked in from Battery Park. We were six of us in our black BDU uniforms and work boots, and we're walking from Battery Park to Ground Zero, and the floodlights were on, and the smoke was coming up from the debris pile. And one of the first things that really hit us was the fact that they were, you know, here days and days and days after the fact, they were still retrieving remains. And we'd only been there a short time, and there was a short whistle burst, and things just stopped. And we observed a team in the rubble actually taking some remains, putting it into a stretcher, covering it with flag, and bringing the remains out and putting it into an ambulance and off to the medical examiner's office. And that was the first, slap in the face that, hey, this is the real thing here.
So what were your duties? Was it a bucket at a time and just pick through?
Basically what we did, Connie, after that first night of, I call it shock therapy, of seeing all that destruction at Ground Zero, we were sent over to Staten Island. And that's where we were to stay and do our work. And we were briefed the next day about what we would be doing. We didn't know, as I said earlier, if we were going to be doing security work in Manhattan or if we were actually going to be working at the debris field. And then they kind of trained us and told us that, hey, you people are going to be actually looking through the debris field. And how that worked is they were loading everything from Ground Zero was put on dump trucks and barged over to Staten Island. And from there, it was again loaded in trucks, taken up to Staten Island in their landfill called Fresh Kills. And they would take the dump trucks would empty everything out. Some front-end loaders would come in, pick things up, and then they would start scattering all the debris on about the size of a football field. And then there would be maybe 30 or 40 of us in what we call Tyvek gear, which is a biohazard suit with a helmet and goggles and a breather and gloves and all that. And they would place 30 or 40 of us on one side of the debris field, and we would start walking through the field of debris with either a shovel or a rake, and we would start looking for anything that looked like it had to be saved, whether it would be remains, personal effects, aircraft parts, anything that looked like this was going to have to be saved. So that was pretty much what we did for the time that we were there. And if we did recover remains, they had to be bagged and photographed and written on the envelope that they were put in where they were found. And there were different tents set up on Staten Island at Fresh Kills with the different agencies that were working there. The FAA, National Transportation Safety Board, the Pathology Department from the Medical Examiner's Office. There were several agencies there. So we would take what we found to the appropriate tent and log it in, and that's how things ended up all in one place.
And you were there for 12 days?
Well, actually less than that. That counted our travel time. But, we were there a full week plus, and it was exhausting because we started at 7 in the morning, and we'd have a break for lunch. And they had people there who prepared food for everybody who was there. And then we'd have a briefing at the end of the day and then a briefing the next day. And it was grueling work, and it was very tiresome, and it was very emotional because you didn't know what you were going to come across yet.
And so can you tell us about some of that?
Pardon?
Can you tell us about some of that, what you came across, and
all
the reactions? And
because I was a funeral director and had worked with remains before, I probably had a little advantage over some of the other people that were there doing the search, because basically they were, firemen and police officers from different agencies. But I, as they walked through one side of the field to the other, looking through the remains, there was everything there from cinder blocks to office furniture to telephones to wiring harnesses to everything. Well,
wow.
They were using rakes and shovels, standing and walking through. I was probably, when I think back now, I think probably I was the only guy on my hands and knees. I felt a little odd, but at the time I thought if anybody had a chance to find small remains, it would be myself because of my work in the funeral business.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to retrieve quite a few small remains the days that I were there.
I'm sure the family was extremely happy for you to do that.
It's very satisfying.
Yeah. I'm sure the family was really happy about that, too, that you took the time to do that and find what they were hoping you would find.
Yeah, the problem is there was so much destruction with the airplanes when they hit the towers. There were very few whole remains recovered in that next few hours after the towers actually collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
Very few full remains, as we call them, were recovered. Everything else was partial remains. And after everything was taken to Freshkills, to the landfill, they estimated 1.6 million tons of ground zero debris had been taken to Staten Island. Just think about that number, 1.6 million tons of debris. And actually recorded that I've found out after the fact, about 1,600 personal effects were retrieved. That would be everything from a lady's shoe to maybe a wristwatch to some jewelry. Maybe a picture that it's at someone's desk at work. When they were all done, final numbers, they had about 4,200, just under 4,300 human remains were actually found. And unfortunately, because they were partial remains, they had to go and be tested for DNA.
Mm-hmm.
Which meant that family members who had lost someone in the towers would have had to provide something from that person's personal items that would be able to extract DNA, a toothbrush, a hair comb, something like that. And it took a while for families to get personal items to the medical examiner's office so they could compare DNA with the DNA that was found on some of these partial remains. And unfortunately, there were only about 300 people who were actually identified from the towers. There were thousands and thousands of pieces of partial remains that were left at the medical examiner's office that were there for years. And we can talk about their dispensation here after a little bit. But it was trying work for everyone that was involved, whether it was the firemen, the police officers who were there, all the medical people. It really was a coming together of the whole country within a few days and a few weeks to do the work. And it was about a year before they finally had everything from Ground Zero sent to Staten Island.
What did they do with everything after you guys sifted through it?
It was actually most of after it was all examined. And there were just, Connie, there were carloads of fire trucks, ambulances, police cars that had been near the towers when the towers collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
And the buildings surrounding those towers were like shaved off and also collapsed. And
right.
A lot of all those vehicles were, so many of them that were destroyed, were also taken to Staten Island, and eventually everything was buried there at Staten Island. Actually, the landfill, Freshkills, was closed just before the incident of 2001. They had been closed a short time. And then as soon as the towers fell, they decided, hey, we have to have a place to take all of these things, to look through them, to sort things out. So they decided that was the natural place to go, to take it all across the river into Staten Island, up to Freshkills. So everything is there now. There were, and the landfill's been closed since then. There is a memorial over at Staten Island now. I've yet to get back to New York City since this happened 20 years ago.
But my goal for next, we're going to have to get you back there just to, I don't know, talk to you again about that some more. Hey, Stan Lee Aswan with us here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm Connie Willis. We are with Stan Lee Aswan, a now retired New York State Undertaker. He spent 12 days working the research and the search and recovery of the Twin Towers remains there on Staten Island right after 9/11. And he was looking for all sorts of things that they told them to look for. Stanley, what was the most difficult thing that you encountered while you were a part of the recovery operation?
Oh, boy. Tough question. A good question. Probably there were a lot of people, trying to get to the locations to see what we were doing. And unfortunately, you couldn't have people watching what you were doing, you know. So people had to be kept back from the areas where we were. But probably one of the most difficult things I actually felt myself was actually when we were at Staten Island, they had, in addition to the field where we would walk through with a shovel or rake to search for personals or partial remains, they had to set up a conveyor belt that was probably, I'm guessing, maybe 60, 70 feet long and only about 4 foot high. And you would stand next to the conveyor belt, and then they would bring over a dump truck with all this debris from the pit, from Manhattan. They would dump the dump truck at the end of the conveyor belt, and then a couple people there would start throwing all these items on the conveyor belt, and it would come your way, and we had five or six people on each side of the conveyor belt, and the belt was moving pretty quickly, but you had to be watching intently. And I recovered quite a few things that day on the conveyor belt. The thing that really gave me the biggest chill, and still does, there was a part of a hydraulic system from one of the aircraft that went into the towers. And I latched onto this hydraulic system. It was about 4 feet long, and the tires were no longer on it. But I knew it was part of an aircraft system. And I yanked that off the conveyor belt. It probably weighed as much as I did. And threw that on the ground. And that gave me chills to think that here, just days and days before, that had been part of an airplane, and people had been on that airplane into that tower. And things like that really gave you chills as you worked that day.
Yeah, because originally it's, hey, I'm going from one location to the next, and this is going to get me there. And then, no, it turned into the weapon.
Yeah. It was, and the thing that was one of the startling things, you look at the numbers. After watching some of the television on Saturday of all the celebrations, not morbid celebrations, but to think about this being 20 years ago happening, you think about the people that were affected. Think about all those people that were killed who were trying to help other people out. 412 emergency workers, 343 firefighters attempted to go up and get people out of the towers, 37 police and Port Authority people, 23 New York PD officers, 8 emergency medical transport people. All, that's a lot of people who lost their lives going into those towers to try to get other people out. And I saw some numbers today that I hadn't seen before. And this really hits at home when you think about the people who lost their lives that weekend in both of those towers. 77% of those who died were men. The average age of the men that were killed was 39. Just think about that, 39.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
23% of the people that were killed in the towers were females. Their average age was 38. That's just stark reality when you think about it. These were young people. Many had families, many newly married, many planning to get married.
With babies on the way.
Yeah, babies on the way.
Yeah, lots of
you
those.
You go to work, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're not coming home from work. And I think the whole country has had shock from it for more years than they want to admit. Most of those family members I heard speak today on network television recall it 20 years later. It's like it happened yesterday.
Yeah.
And it still affects them mentally and emotionally and physically as well. And that's just really hard to cope with when you think about it.
Well, besides you doing the search and recovery part of it, which would be extremely emotional and moving, you just being in the state itself, you know, that was just any New Yorker, whether you were in the city or not of the state of New York, it didn't matter. You were a New Yorker and it happened on your land, you know. It wasn't just, you know, I mean, Americans across the board, hey, we all pulled together, but it's still like the New Yorkers would go, hey, I'm in New York. So you all, it seemed like you guys got even more information constantly about it.
I've talked to so many people over the years who were so involved with this in one way or the other, if it was after the fact, whether it's within the few days of when the towers were struck by the aircraft, or if it was a year later, it affected them a great deal emotionally and physically as well. And a lot of people have had long-term effects, and that's, we haven't talked about that, but they talked about that a little bit on network today.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that because of the breathing in. That was the problem with a lot of people, right? Breathing in that air hurt them.
Yeah.
Did you have problems with that?
I'm knocking on wood now here, and I've been pretty healthy over the years. A few medical problems, but nothing I can trace back to a recovery work there. But the numbers are staggering. 17 years, these are numbers that I just found the other day, 17 years after the towers collapsed, over 10,000 first responders have been diagnosed with some type of cancer. Think about that. That's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
They've had at least 2,000 deaths have been attributed to 9/11 illnesses, whether that would be cancer, whatever, you know, there are a lot of other illnesses that were brought on because of all the things that were in the air that day when the towers collapsed. You remember the television images of people walking out covered with dirt and dust? You remember
those
images?
Absolutely. They look like statues walking.
Yes. Yes. And a lot of that dust was not just concrete dust. There was asbestos, the fires and the smoke. Had all these chemicals from wires being burned, and paint and other chemicals burning and exploding in the towers. And that led to so many cases of cancer over the years. And they say in a short amount of time, the number of people that will die from related illnesses to the actual power collapse, the numbers will be greater than the people that actually died there eventually. The numbers will be greater than the people that died that morning at the towers. It's staggering to think about that.
That would make sense, though, because there were so many people down below running from the smoke. When the billows as well, I mean, it was happening throughout, but when the billow just came like this movie, like a horror film. I mean, it just didn't look real. I mean, the whole thing was just absolutely just, I mean, okay, here's one tower, smoke billowing out off of it, and everybody around, you know, everybody's looking at it, and whether you're in the city or just watching on TV from somewhere or listening to it on the radio. And then the second one, plane goes through the second one, then you've got it falling, then you know, the billows of smoke and falling, you know, the other one falling. It just didn't stop. It didn't stop.
Yeah, it was a sight that I think anybody that either saw it live or was actually there to see it in person, it's just something that will stick with people forever. And then that's just the towers. And then you had the same destruction at the Pentagon. You know, that American flight number 77 that hit the west side of the Pentagon, that was at the 9:37 in the morning.
Yep.
58 people were on that aircraft. And there were a lot of young people on that aircraft as well. There was a children's group I read going somewhere that day, and there were a lot of young people on that aircraft. And then, of course, and then alone, you've got the Pentagon, but then you've got Shakesville.
Yes.
A little after 10 that morning, that United number 93 that was out of Newark, and there were 44 passengers and crew members on that plane. And that was total decimation at Shanksville. I mean,
yeah, that was when they went to the video of that. It was just so sad because I watched it again today. Obviously, that's all I've watched today. But when they showed the first video there, you just saw them standing there. You knew that was it. Nothing there to see. It was like
there was nothing recognizable as an aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
The airplane was shredded as well as its occupants, unfortunately. And it was, I read that aircraft was doing over 400 miles an hour when it went into the ground. And at that speed and velocity, there's going to be very little left that's recognizable. It's a sad, sad thing. Very sad.
Now, just I can feel some people right now going to the conspiracy thoughts. What would you say after being a part of it and really seeing things deep down? And of course, you only did in New York, but what do you think of all that? What do you think happened?
I really don't think there was. After looking at all the numbers and the facts and reading a lot about those four airplanes and the hijackers that were involved, I just find it hard to believe that that it could be as someone who called an inside job, where you could go into two towers ahead of time and wire them with explosives to make it look like an airplane brought it down. I just find that kind of hard to believe. There are people probably who firmly believe that it was done from someone here, not outside terrorists. But I think those 19 hijackers that were involved with those four airplanes were responsible. And there have been a couple of good movies that have been put out in the last few years about it. I think the one that 9/11 was the one was really a good film that was put out a few years ago. I think it was called 9/11. And it showed the hijackers from how they got in, started from their hotel rooms through the whole process. And I think it was a terrorist job. And I doubt very much that they're going to disprove it. I really would find it hard to believe that they could disprove it.
It's still shock. I mean, 20 years ago, I can't believe it's been 20 years. And now you see the babies, you know, from the families. They had made a big special out of that about showing the babies that never met one of their parents or sisters or something. And how they are together today, and they all meet with each other along the way.
Yeah, I saw some of the younger people, survivors, for family survivors who were speaking today from the ceremony in Manhattan, and talking about their mom or their dad that they had lost at 9/11, And some of them were maybe 4 or 5 years old, some younger. They had some recollection of their parent or parents, but not a real good memory, you know. And that's sad, you know, that they've had them taken away from them, and they'll never have a full life of parentage with someone they've lost. That's the tragedy of the whole thing, is the people that it's touched, with all those families that lost lives in the towers and at Shanksville and at the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm.
And those families have to go on. And I saw that for years when I was in the funeral business. You know, when you lose someone in your family, you have to make adjustments to go on with your life. And you don't forget that person. You honor that person in things that you do as you go on with your life. But you do have to learn to go on with your own life. And it's a difficult, difficult thing. And that those poor people today who spoke about losing family members 20 years ago, you could feel their feelings. It was so riveting to hear them today.
Yeah,
it really brought you back. If it didn't make you feel really bad, then you're an emotionalist person.
Yeah, walk the other way. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, too many like that. So, I got a question. I got a question here. If you can answer it before the break here, did you know anything about Building 7? Did you get any further information with Building 7?
No, I did not, Connie. No, I had nothing on that.
Because, you know, everybody wants to ask about that. I've got a whole bunch of questions for that one, just that one alone. So, okay.
Oh.
Well, there you go.
No, we were only at
mystery.
We were only at Ground Zero that first evening when we arrived.
Okay.
And then we were shuttled right over with our two vehicles that we had that we drove down. We were taken right to Manhattan, or right over to Staten Island, and that's where they told us, "You guys are going to do your work." So that's where we did our work.
Yeah, and I would think you'd be the perfect pick, and I would think they would get as many undertakers as possible because you do have that experience and can handle it better than most, I would imagine.
Yeah, because we've been involved with those things in the business, and it was while I was down there at 9/11. I was contacted by people who were from FEMA, and they invited me to join their disaster mortuary operations response team called DMORT. So a year later, I was brought into FEMA with DMORT and went down to Gulfport, Mississippi in 2006 to do recovery for Hurricane Katrina. That's a whole different story someday.
Yeah, that'll be another night. But right now, it's 9/11. We're talking with Stanley Swan here on Coast to Coast AM. Connie Willis with you. He's a now retired New York State undertaker. And he worked with the search and recovery of the Twin Towers remains and on Staten Island there after 9/11. So we'll get back to that and get into a little bit deeper conversations, but also you can call and ask him some questions as well. We're going to do that for you next hour. And a reminder that open lines will be tonight where, you know, I want to know, just like we did last night, where were you when it happened? Where were you when it happened? That'll be open lines later, but if you'd like to ask Stanley some questions, you can do that next here. Thanks for listening. This is Connie Willis, and you're listening to Coast to Coast AM.